Hey everybody, back here on the Physics Milkshake. So we have a beautiful day right here in Bengaluru, and we are sitting here in a coffee place, like a cafe. And today is like a super special podcast because it's not just me on the podcast. I also have my very best friend here, and this dude is like, he is like a genius. Okay, maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration. What do you think?
I don't know.
He doesn't know yet. But we'll find out in a couple of years. Don't you think?
Yeah.
And the Fields medal will answer the question, right?
Not Fields medal, maybe, but breakthrough medal or something else.
Something like that. Yeah. But you're going to do it. You're going to do it, right? You're going to go big in mathematics.
Yes, for sure.
So this guy's a this guy's a mathematics guy. He's doing his PhD in Italy. And his area of expertise is actually partial differential equations. And I have no idea about it. But like, it sounds cool, and I have played around with the equations a bit before. And I can tell you it's not an easy job. But this guy does one hell of a, you know, he makes art out of it. And he's done a lot of work in this before. So today we are just going to chill it. We're not going to talk about partial differential equations in a 7-minute audio. But then we're going to just try talking about something really silly, perhaps, like, I don't know, triangles or circles or hexagonal shapes or whatever. And talking about hexagonal shapes, I have a whole new podcast coming up just for my wasps.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay, guys, this is the first time I'm talking about this on the podcast, but I'm like super excited about it. I have these wasps in my house, and I'm going to be talking about the hexagonal nests very soon. But that's a completely different podcast. This podcast, I am going to be a 5.5-year-old.
Okay.
5.5, that's my age. And Pawan here is a mathematician. And we're going to have a discussion and how it might seem when it comes to the brain of a 5.5 and how she would ask questions as opposed to his ability to answer them. Are you ready, Mr. Pawan Kumar Sarvajayakumar?
Yeah, sure, we can.
That's his name, by the way. It's like extravagantly long, dude.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Okay, cool, awesome. So where do we start?
You asked me the question.
Yeah, so like we were just talking today about the geometry of the universe, and there's just like so much pattern and symmetry, and there is some precision in the geometry of the things we see in our everyday life. So what can you say? If I say, like my first question is, do you think this inherent patterns we see, do they really exist? Or is it a consequence of our observation? Or do you think this geometry really exists in nature intrinsically?
See, first of all, as a humans, in order to understand something around us, what we did is we codified our existence into something we can measure, which starts with 0, 1, 2. Okay, this is
like
the first. Yeah, integers.
Okay.
Okay, so when we codified our whole existence, then that gives us the ability to see the patterns. For example, you take anywhere, you can see a pattern, because if you randomly say something like, okay, I want to see a number which has 10 digits in it, and you see it everywhere. Okay, when you say, okay, I want to see prime numbers, you can see it everywhere.
For
example, you take petals in the leaves or petals in the flower, you see prime numbers. You take leaves, you see prime numbers. In fact, if you take your face, you can see prime numbers. You know, they say that the most beautiful face ever is the one which has a golden ratio in it. Also, you can see everywhere. For example, there are 9 planets. Okay, 9 is not a prime number though, but yeah, the 9 has a very good meaning for it. And then similarly, we can see patterns everywhere. It's our human mind which search for pattern. Because our mind is so mathematical that we always search for patterns.
So like our brain searches for pattern, but do you think maybe pattern exists only because we search for it? I mean, don't you think why would nature give why would nature care about symmetry or pattern? It is inherently chaotic and it's tending towards more and more disorder. So in a universe of chaos, why is nature trying to rebel itself and produce symmetry the way we see it on planet Earth? And don't you think that's kind of weird. That's going against what we know is the nature of nature.
No, actually it's opposite. It's not going against the nature itself, but it's going towards the nature. Why did I say that? The first thing is this. As you said, it's always going from chaotic to more chaotic.
Yeah.
That means there's also order there. It's not, see, if you see as a whole, the entropy is always increasing.
Yeah.
But then if you see in terms of energies and vibration, the energies and vibration are always trying to minimize itself. So basically you take anything, for example, light traveling through space or light traveling through glass, it's a minimization of energy. Or you can say about the symmetry as well. The reason why all our planets are spherical is because that consumes least amount of energy. The same way, if you see a path hole, it's also round. Why? Because it consumes less amount of energy to build that, as well as there's much more mathematicals to it. And then if you see anything, for example, cell, development of cell or development of hexagonal patterns in the wasp, or you can say, you see basically anything, it's always the minimization of energy. If this principle, if you remove from the universe, then probably we won't see any symmetries and no supersymmetries as well.
So that's kind of odd, really, because like if I have to give it a thought, like there is both these laws, one law tending towards more disorder, another law that talks about complexity and structure, right? So there are two things, and it's kind of weird that they coexist in this universe, because we humans, by our existence itself, I think, is a proof that we are sort of violating the laws of entropy. We are temporary lapses in this law, because we are so complex individually, and that complex, in order to emerge, it's a temporary attempt against nature's
If we talk about complexity of humans, that can arise in different levels. Again, if you talk in terms of biology, it's purely by luck.
Okay.
But now when you say something like a physical system which doesn't have life to it, then most of them are tending towards chaos in a much bigger sense. But if you see as an individual atom, let's say, for example, a person who is trying to do a work, he's trying to do a work in the least possible energy. The same with planet as well.
So he's trying to invest a least amount of energy. And in that attempt of minimization, you're saying that structure emerges,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And then there is one more thing to it, the stability factor of it.
Right.
So if at all, if something is not stable, probably you won't see it around you. Even if it's there now, that leads to more chaotic. But now if you have a stability aspect to it, the chaos condenses to a more chaotic place. But now that chaos, the more disordered place, is much more geometrical in sense. You see what I'm saying? For example, the moon and the earth before was chaos. Like there's a planet, let's say, okay, there was an asteroid which is the earth, which hit the earth. Before it was much chaotic. After that, it was a lot of chaotic. But because of the stability of Earth around the Sun, at least for now, I'm not talking about the whole...
Yeah.
At least for now, yeah.
We all remember our previous podcast. Yeah. What our previous podcast reference? Okay.
Okay. So now, at least for now, then that led to something similar. Something geometrical, which is a spherical. There is, of course, a little bit discontinuities in it, but still it's spherical and then it's geometrical. Now, there comes... the disorder leading to geometries or symmetries. In fact, if you see, you can see a lot of super symmetries as well, you know?
Right. So this is like really a subtle aspect to explore, because you are playing at this very edge of our understanding of what entropy means, right? You're kind of playing at the edge of our understanding of why structure arises.
Well, if you talk about entropy, I would say there was one beautiful person who lost his life because he understood entropy. In fact, I also cried when I understood entropy, what exactly it means. I recommend this book for everyone. It's called Anxiety and the Equation, Understanding Boltzmann Equation.
Okay.
So this is the book where they talk only about entropy and how Boltzmann ended up his life. He actually suicided himself because he invented an equation, which is also on his grave, called S is equals to minus K log T. And if you see the geometric nature of this, it'll blow your mind as well, because minus k is a constant anyways, log t, and it's a minus, is like a slope which is always increasing. It's a monotonically increasing function. And then that can give answers to a lot of questions. And the meanwhile, stability plays a major role in all the universe aspects of it. And in case of humans and their behaviors, the complexity and then the minimization of energy will lead to beautiful structures and beautiful patterns, you know. There are probably...
Right. I think even in the wasp case, it's trying to build something where it not only optimizes the functionality of the nest, but it is minimizing the losses. It is minimizing the amount of wastage of space, you know.
Nature is the best optimizer,
yeah,
you know.
Nature is the best optimizer. So that was great. We talked about that. Getting back to sort of what we wanted to talk about, we thought we would just do a few minutes of trying to understand something really specific. Triangles, okay? Now, we were thinking about whether it's discovered or invented, mathematics in general.
It's
a debatable question, but if we take something really simple, like the sum of the angles of a triangle is 180 degrees. Now, that is something so precise, and it applies to a triangle anywhere. Like, if somebody drew a triangle on the face of a planet that we have never touched before, the law is going to be satisfied, right? So do you think there exists a universe in which there exists a triangle which does not fulfill this law? Or do you think the same mathematical laws apply in different realities?
Well, if you ask me this question, I say it's, first of all, it's debatable. And then, yeah, as you told, if you take some random universe and apply this theorem, which is in its precision, for sure it's going to apply. But now, if you change a little bit aspect of that theorem, let's say, for example, instead of taking an Euclidean space, you take a curved space. Now it's not true anymore. Okay. If you take, let's say, if you say triangle, it's a two-dimensional stuff. But now if you take triangle in three-dimensional, which is possible as well, now it's not going to stay true as well. Now, for a theorem, it's always true wherever it is, because theorem specifies definity. It has something which I would say precision in it. For sure, it's going to apply to anywhere in the universe. But now if you change a little bit aspect of the theorem, then for sure, no.
Are you saying that all theories that we have accepted in science so far, do you think all of them have certain exceptions?
No, that's wrong. So what I'm trying to say is this. If you have a theorem, it's true everywhere.
Okay.
But you can make an exception to a theorem. Let me give you an example. As you said, in a Euclidean space of R2, okay, the three angles sum up to 180 degree. Perfect. Now there's no exception to it. For sure, in any Euclidean space you consider in the universe, it's going to be same.
What do you mean by Euclidean space? Like, I've heard a lot of this, and even in physics, it is really vital to understand it. But as someone who wants to talk from the point of view of, say, a five-year-old, I don't understand
it's
Euclidean.
It's the space we live in, that's all. It's the space
we see. Okay, so
how can you
say that there is a space that is not Euclidean?
Exactly. So that's the point. Now, whatever you see with your eyes is not two-dimensional at all.
Okay.
It's a three-dimensional projection. Two-dimensional projection
off.
In a three-dimensional plane. In a three-dimensional plane. It's opposite, not the projection itself. So it's a back projection. So whatever you see in this universe is not two-dimensional. It's a projection in three-dimensional space. But now if you consider blankly, like purely two-dimensional space, then I would say it's a Euclidean space. It's basically, let's say, a purest form of a two-dimensional space, which is not there. Now, if you say Euclidean space in three, that's where we live in. That's where all the laws, let's say two lines intersect and then they never meet again. All these laws plays true, which is true. Okay, now if you say something else, let's say Hilbert space or something else, now we have left a lot of meanings to it, which comes from
Can those spaces exist in the reality that we know? Like, as a layman to mathematics, and you guys talk a lot about different kind of spaces. Are those spaces valid in our model of reality, or are they just these really abstract concepts in our mathematics, and they are just resultants of equations or formulations that we have made up?
Okay, some spaces, for example, is a reality. For example, Hilbert space. So Hilbert space is a subspace of Euclidean space, I would say.
Okay.
And then there are some spaces which are really non-existent, which only lives in the abstract sense. And then for some specific problems or some specific cases, you need to have a space which is completely abstract. Okay. In that
case, it's
a lot of debatable question. Actually.
Okay. So, by what I am understanding, I think what is happening is that often in physics or even in mathematics, we have to come up with ideas that might have no correlation to our physical reality, right?
No. For example, let me give an example in physics. Now you say that Earth is revolving around a sun.
Yeah.
Now you say what space I should choose. Now, since Earth is continuously revolving, there's no breaks, there's no jump, basically. Now, it's also rotating in a comp, let's say a boundary. It's not going, let's say, too far away or coming back too close to it. Now, we say, okay, we live in a three-dimensional space, which is very good. But now, I add two more factors to it, that Earth is continuously rotating. The second one, it is compact, which is bounded. Now, bounded, and then I say continuous, will give me a compact space. Okay, in the compact space, I can say this to myself. If I have velocity of Earth today, and then where it is, then for sure, after 6 months, I'm going to determine where it is.
So it's a deterministic model.
It's a deterministic model. That means the space is complete as well.
Okay.
Right now, we categorize this space as something called Hilbert space, which is a complete space. It's a bounded and continuous space, which is also complete. Now, if you say Hilbert space doesn't exist, you can debate on that. But if you say Hilbert space exists, you can also debate on that. But most of the cases, it's something which is subspace. If you take universe as the whole space, then you can always create subspaces to your specific problem.
Okay. So really, I think the way a mathematician approaches logic or approaches theorization and modeling of the universe, generality, I think it's really distinct. It's different from how, not just a physicist, but perhaps how a pure logician or a rationalist would approach the same problem. And I think you guys have explored the abstract stuff so deep that it reaches this point where it is not correlated with physical reality anymore. It's a completely new world that you guys have created.
If you talk about mathematicians, this is so unique in terms of mathematics. Only mathematicians can understand, maybe. So there are two kinds of mathematicians. One who looks for, let's say, what I told, like complete and all this stuff as a physical stuff. And there are other mathematicians who go purely by the abstract sense and the logic and nothing else.
Right.
If you say them, can you make me imagine, let's say, a curve which looks like x square? Probably they cannot do that. But now if you say, okay, this is a partial differential equation, can you solve this partial differential equation? Without solving it, can you tell me the properties of this? Probably they'll be able to do, because they go by pure abstract sense in an infinite dimensional space, which we cannot see.
Okay, in an infinite dimensional space.
Yes.
That's a word that these guys throw around at breakfast every day.
Yeah.
Infinite dimensional space, what up? So anyway, it was so fun having a mathematician. We're going to do this more often.
Sure.
And we're going to have all kinds of people on this podcast. And we're going to hear different perspectives. And it's always so fresh. And it's amazing.
Someday we should talk about how, I think I explained you this once, how our intuition of numbers and graphics can make us feel like a fool. How mathematics is the only stuff which is close to reality.
Right.
For example, I gave you an example
I think that's a separate episode. But this is really interesting. And the topic is that often you think your intuition is the closest to truth. Or when I say intuition, I mean your model of reality in your head. But often it can be really wrong. And certain things are just complete misconceptions. And I think what he's trying to say is that mathematics so far is the most universal language and the closest thing.
Reality.
Yeah, closest thing we've ever gotten to reality.
Unfortunately, my dear friends, the universe and the way we have non-linear. You know, you always have to remember that whatever models we have now is mostly for linear. Non-linear, we still have a long, long, long way to go.
Yeah, I don't think we understand it fully, but it's the closest thing we've got to trying to describe nature the way it is. So all of you, irrespective of what you're doing, you got to understand mathematics to some extent. And in what way you want to understand it is completely your choice. But I think it's like art. It's something that you have to enjoy, you know. So we will come back with the next episode. And bye until then. Kaboom. Okay, bye. Say bye.
Say bye.
You should say bye.
Yeah, bye.
Okay, all right, whatever. Bye.